All right, without question, the not only the best Pac-12 writer in the country, but I think one of the best college football writers in the country. His stuff is just a must-read with the San Jose Mercury News, and he joins us every once in a while to talk Pac-12, and we appreciate him coming on with us today. John Wilner from the San Jose Mercury News. John, Luke, and I'm Gambo. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you guys?
I'm great. Reading your column, boy, I'll tell you, something that just shook me when I was reading this column. How were the Sun Devils healthy enough to field a full team in the opener at USC and then a few days later suffer an outbreak so severe that it knocked them out for 3 games and counting? Was that, when that was happening, you were onto it a little bit, but were a lot of people talking about how ASU was missing that many games after just playing?
It raised some eyebrows around the conference. You know, just based on daily testing or mostly daily testing, you know, the schools were doing it 4 or 5 times a week. Some were doing it 7, 8 times a week. Based on the amount of time the kids were getting tested and the fact that you had a 10-day isolation period and 14-day quarantine, everybody else, when they had outbreaks, they were limited to 2-week outbreaks. And then they had it under control and they had enough players to be able to play after missing 2 games. But for some reason, ASU had to miss 3 games. And it never made sense to me back then, as I wrote, that if you were following the protocols very strictly with the quarantines for 2 weeks, that you'd be out for longer than that. But they were. And I didn't understand it then. And, you know, I still don't know exactly what happened, but it was very, very odd.
Yeah. What's being alleged is that Arizona State violated NCAA rules by hosting recruits during the COVID period. The COVID protocols were adopted by the NCAA, and the conference itself had it as well. You point out that if they were cheating during this period, you called it deplorable cheating. I guess cheating at a level that you wouldn't expect anybody else to cheat at that level, correct?
You know, I don't have any idea if other schools were cheating or not. But I do know that that's cheating that involves violations of public health orders. That is cheating. And, you know, we don't know exactly if it happened, if the NCAA is going to determine that it was ASU violated rules. But if what has been alleged is true, that was a public safety, public health issue. That goes way beyond, you know, the normal college football cheating that you do to get recruits, in my opinion. And it was just, it would just be wrong. And I think we're seeing that, the level of outrage that could come if it's proven to be true by the fact that several college public officials have commented on the record about ASU's situation. You never, ever, ever see a coach or an athletic director from another school commenting on the record about a school's potential NCAA violations. And yet we've seen it 3 times with the ASU situation in the last 24 hours. The Notre Dame athletic director, the Oregon State athletic director, and the Stanford football coach have all made public comments. And that tells you what the level of outrage would be if it's proven that this stuff is true and the ASU was just flaunting, public health orders during a once in a century pandemic.
Talking to John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News. John, if this all ends up being true or parts of this end up being true, I mean, what does this do for the concept of the new leadership model in college football?
Well, I mean, I think the new leadership model already right now is under a little bit of scrutiny just based on what we know to this point. I mean, I don't know how much they're going to get is going to be proven true or could be determined to have been an NCAA violation. But it sure seems like there's enough. I mean, there's a dossier with screenshots and receipts and emails. I mean, unless all that stuff has been made up, there's more than likely there's something there. And so I just think that the way the whole thing has happened in the culture, the cultural problems that ASU is having within the football program and on the staff, which were known within the college football ranks, just not known publicly, I think the new leadership model is under a little bit of question.
One of the things that, you see that they're recruiting well with Antonio Pierce and they're getting out there and they're bringing all these talent from all these areas. And, you know, really running up the recruiting rankings. In your column, it's pointed out that whenever a program suddenly has next level success from the areas outside a traditional recruiting base, it's suspicious. Were there other Pac-12 programs that were suspicious of this? Was it people in the media? That suspicion that arose, was it something that was very noticeable to people that weren't here at ASU?
If you are following Pac-12 recruiting closely, you have been suspicious of what's going on at ASU for several years. I mean, it was those suspicions were openly discussed, you know, in very private conversations involving Pac-12 recruiting. Now, nobody that I spoke to, you know, could say for sure that there was a violation being committed, but everybody was extraordinarily suspicious. And I'd add that if ASU's recruiting success had happened at a similar situation in another school, let's say Colorado, all of a sudden was getting four-star players from the Midwest and from Florida and places that they never got four-star players from before, people would be suspicious of Colorado. That just, it's, you know, when you box above your weight level on the recruiting trail, all of a sudden, you know, it's always, always suspicious.
John, how much of the road ahead here? I mean, it's impossible to predict what the NCAA is going to do or when they do it. But how difficult does this now get for ASU because of that perceived rift within the program, where it certainly seems like somebody within the program, or maybe more than one person, is willing to turn on them?
Yeah, well, it does certainly see. That's also struck me, is that it appears people are very willing to talk to the NCAA, which is not a good sign for ASU. Look, ASU's got a very good roster for this fall. I picked them to win the South, right? And if the NCAA doesn't rule or there's no internal investigation to, you know, prompts changes in the coaching staff, they got a heck of a chance to have a good fall. There's no doubt about that. I don't know how long this will take. NCAA does not have subpoena power. And as certainly as we've seen with the situation in Tucson, these investigations can take years, and they've got a lot on their plate. The one thing, though, that is different about this case than, say, the basketball, you know, the FBI scandal stuff, is they've got a dossier and they've got names of recruits. And those recruits want to play college football. Whether those recruits are at ASU or at other schools, they want to play college football. And the NCAA can tell those recruits, you talk or you're ineligible. And so they have got a fair amount of leverage in a case like this relative to, say, what's going on with that FBI scandal, yeah, where they really don't have any leverage. In that regard, this could move quicker than maybe people think. I mean, I still don't know that they'll get anything resolved by September, but the fact that they have some leverage with kids who want to play gives them the chance to move quickly.
John, have you seen the comments by former Sun Devil and current Cardinal running back Eno Benjamin?
I have not, no.
Okay, this might be good. He's on Twitter, and he's got a bunch of comments. This might be good for your next comment. He's got a lot of comments on this. Grown-ass men going out sad because they're upset. The saddest thing betrayal is that it never comes from your enemies. The man gave you an opportunity, said nothing but great things about you at all times, and folks turn their back to run their mouths. Pathetic. What is loyalty? Built on ongoing 20-year relationships and went out so sad. There's a lot of comments where he's, you know, clearly pointing to this situation with ASU. He's on Twitter. Might be something for you to read. But what I did want to ask you is, you point out that not only Herm Edwards, but also Ray Anderson, if these allegations are proven true, that it could be the downfall of that entire, not only coaching staff, but also the athletic department led by Ray Anderson.
We don't know what's going to happen, but I don't think anything's off the table. Given the fact that this is, you know, a different level because it involves a public health issue, right? They're violating public orders. With Ray Anderson, the situation is going to be, if there's proven to be violations, you know, did he know or should he have known, right? I mean, you've got the athletic director is ultimately responsible for what's going on in his department. So if there's a situation where there's rules being broken left and right and he didn't know, you know, then I'm sure that the ASU's, you know, the regents or President Crow will have to ask, you know, should he have known or not? And we should point out that, you know, the NCAA violation, NCAA investigations over time, sometimes they start investigating X. And once they get into X, they find out about Y. And then they find out about Z. And then that's all of a sudden when you've got gigantic problems. So while we don't know if what's been reported is going to become an NCAA violation, we also don't know if there is other stuff that hasn't been publicly reported that might be in that dossier. So that's something to keep in mind, too.
Well, we'll continue to follow your column with the San Jose Mercury News. It's the best in the country. You're the best at what you do. We appreciate it. We always read your stuff. Thanks for spending some time with us, John.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that's John Wilner from the San Jose Mercury News talking about – he's got a great column, scathing column, about the developments that are going on right now with the ASU football program. So we'll keep our eye on that, and we'll see if anything's going to happen soon. I think it'll take some time. The Phoenix Suns, if they do win a championship, would some people consider it a tainted championship? We'll talk about that next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. All right, follow me here. Suns get by the Lakers. Who are the Lakers missing?
Anthony Davis and half of LeBron.
Half of LeBron. And Kentavious Caldwell-Pope a little bit, too.
Yeah, even when he was there, he was missing.
All right, okay.
Okay.
They get by the Nuggets. Who are the Nuggets missing?
Jamal Murray.
Yeah, and Will Barton didn't play the first game, and he was hampered.
He might have been their best player at the end of the game, or at the end of the series.
But no Jamal Murray.
Yeah.
If they play the Clippers, they'll get by the Clippers without who?
Probably Kawhi Leonard.
Mm. Okay. As possible, if they play the Nets in the final, they could play the Nets without
Kyrie
or Harden.
Or Harden, yeah.
Is anybody going to think that this is a tainted championship for the Suns? Are people going to say that if the Suns win? I'm bracing because the Suns won, but Denver didn't have Murray. LeBron, AD wasn't in L.A. The Clippers didn't have Kawhi. The Nets didn't have Harden or Kyrie. I mean, are we setting ourselves up for people discrediting the Suns championship if they win one?
Who's going to say it? Lakers fans? Maybe Nets fans if that's the championship?
No, the people that cover the league, the people that people listen to and they watch. And I'm not just talking fans here. Yeah. I'm just talking to people going to look at that championship and they're going to say, boy, they didn't beat it. You know, they beat all these teams that were injured.
Isn't that true for every team that gets to the finals, though? Every
Especially
team's dealing
year.
With injuries.
We've
yeah.
had more injuries this it's... year than usually you may play one team that's got an injury. The Suns might run the gamut and face teams with injuries.
If people are going to want to find something to nitpick, sure, they could. But you could do that, I think, with anyone that wins the championship this year.
I think it's definitely fair to look if the path that you just put out there, if it plays out, they go through the Clippers without Kawhi and they go through the Nets without Kyrie and or Harden. It's certainly fair to look from the Suns' perspective and say, okay, you know what? Things kind of broke our way finally after 11 years of them not breaking our way.
Yeah.
But to Sarah's point, every team is hurt this year in the playoffs. So whoever
except
wins.
The Suns.
Yeah, except the
Chris
Suns.
Chris Paul a little bit, but he's been fine.
Yeah. But like, he might miss Suns game one
been,
or two here.
The Suns have been relatively healthy. They've been a relatively healthy team. Abdul Nader is out.
Yes.
Abdul Nader is the guy that's out. But, you know, the Lakers AD, Jamal Murray, Kawhi, you know, maybe it's Conley if it's the Jazz. And then the Nets have had, you know, major issues with Kyrie and Harden. I mean, it's Durant by himself with that, with guys like Landry Shamat playing well. So you just wonder if people could criticize in some way the Suns championship, saying they wouldn't have won that thing if these teams were healthy.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly something to the idea that the Suns have had a very nice path so far. There's really no denying that. But the pushback would be, look, I mean, the Suns, that's why you go out there and sweep Denver. So you're not hanging around playing games 5 and 6 without Chris Paul, where meanwhile, if the Clippers had swept Utah, Kawhi probably doesn't get hurt. And he's good to go. The Suns, it goes back to that old adage of you just do, all you can do is play what's in front of you. And, I mean, even throughout the season, they played a lot of teams whose best players weren't playing, to the point where I was kind of worried what happens when you get to the playoffs and you're playing these teams at full strength. And they haven't had to yet.
They haven't had to.
But they also just blew out Denver in every game, too.
You don't get, I don't think teams get criticized when, you know, if you've got to play four series and, you know, to win this thing, and you play one series where a team's hurt but the other teams aren't, you know, that's okay. You know, but you, the Suns can likely go through this whole thing without playing a healthy team.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
and
it's
the Suns have, they could. They could run the, it's possible that they run the tables here and they don't play a team that was at full strength.
And what's frustrating, and setting Brooklyn aside for a second, because I do think that's the best team, but what's frustrating from the Suns' perspective is you definitely would have beat Denver anyway after having watched that series. Denver just had issues. You know, we'll never know if you would have beat the Lakers if Anthony Davis was healthy the whole time. We'll never know what would have happened if you end up beating the Clippers without Kawhi, how different it would have been. But I think the Suns believe, and possibly truly, that they would have won those series anyway. And so, I mean, your original question, does somebody criticize them for that?
You believe that. I believe that, too.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm
but
just saying, from a national perspective,
yeah,
where the Suns don't get a lot of credit.
Yeah.
The national perspective, where the Suns don't get a lot of credit. Here locally, I look, do I think that they would beat Denver with Jamal? Yeah.
Yeah,
do
especially after watching that series.
I mean, I just, you know, I've seen this team all year. I believe in this team. So I see this team, I believe in this team. But there's, you know, but we always comment on the lack of respect that the national people give the Suns.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. Are we bracing for the fact that they could run the... Now, listen, we may not even care. You know what?
We're
say whatever you
care.
Want to say, man. Hey, we got that trophy. Say whatever you want. The trophy's here in Phoenix. They're NBA champ. You can't... You're not putting an asterisk next to it. You can't take it away. They're your NBA champs.
And that's the thing. If people are going to criticize them for it, it's going to be in the next 3 months. Nobody's going to look back in 5 or 10 years and be like, oh, yeah, the Suns won that year because everybody they played was hurt. That's not going to carry over. And look, honestly, Gambo, the remedy is... keep doing what you're doing where you win every game by 17 points. And then it's a lot harder for people to look and say like, oh, but you wouldn't have beat them if they had this player.
Yeah, they've clobbered these teams.
Yeah. None of these games have been close.
They've clobbered these teams. Denver made a little bit of a run in game four to keep it close, but the Suns were, yeah, they when they beat the Lakers, they beat the hell out of the Lakers. When they beat the Nuggets, they beat the hell out of the Nuggets.
It is more high profile now coming up, so if they go through the Clippers without Kawhi and they go through the Nets without Harden and Kyrie, that's certainly going to be a storyline. But again, I don't think people are going to remember that a year from now. And I don't think anybody here cares because you just went through the last 11 years when nothing went your way.
Right.
So you were kind of due for a few breaks.
Yeah, it's not like this is a 62 Major League Baseball game season where the Dodgers won. Oh, it's only a 62 game season. Still, the Dodgers are the champs. I hate it, but the Dodgers are the champs.
Yeah.
They won the World Series last year. I hate it, but they're the World Series champs. You know, you look at this year, you had 10 less games. It's not an 82-game season. It was a 72-game season. And LeBron, you know, went out yesterday and complained about all the injuries. And I told you it was going to happen. And look, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think we all expected that there was going to be a lot of injuries this year. They put a lot of games together in a short amount of time to get, because it was all about the money. All about the money and making the money. So they played a lot of games in a short time period. And you know what? There were injuries. Deal with it. Give the Suns credit for staying healthy through this thing when other teams couldn't.
Yeah, and the other thing that works in their favor, and they did this, so it should, it's not like they snuck in as the 8th seed and they got an easy path through the playoffs. They were one game out of having the best record in the NBA all season, and they played their players. And they are a younger team, so maybe you're a little less likely to get injured. Some of it's luck, certainly. And look, the other thing is they had to overcome the Chris Paul injury in that Lakers series. It certainly seems like he has overcome that now, but it's not like it was the easiest path where everything was just perfect for them. It's possible they go through without playing anybody at full strength. I think that's probably frustrating to Suns fans to a certain extent as well, because you want to see Booker versus Donovan Mitchell at full strength. You want to take out Brooklyn with all their best players. Just might not be an option for you.
Yeah, we'll see. But we'll know tomorrow whether the Suns are playing Sunday or Tuesday. So at least we'll find out with that Clippers game. If the Clippers win, as everybody probably knows by now, then the Suns are going to play Sunday, and they're going to play here in Phoenix. If the Jazz win tomorrow night, then we don't know where the Suns are going to play, but we know that the game won't be till Tuesday, which will buy Chris Paul a little bit of extra time. All right, around the league. Oh, you got something to add?
I got one.
Go ahead, give it.
Yeah, if we're talking about the Suns, maybe somebody wants tickets. You can win tickets to the first Suns home Western Conference Finals game in over 10 years by texting TICKET to 620-620 for your chance to score the hottest tickets in town. That's TICKET to 620-620.
Are the Suns the team to root for? With all the teams left in the NBA, are more people rooting for the Suns? We'll talk about that next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. right, we head to the top of the ninth inning. The D-backs trying to not stand alone with the record. They're only down by 8 runs in the ninth.
Wait, are they trying?
Okay, maybe they're not.
You know,
but they head to the ninth needing 8 runs to tie, down 10-2, to not stand alone as the worst, with the worst road losing streak in the history of baseball.
There is good news, though. They just got Kirk Casale out, so he will not
they
be
did.
Hitting
He's
for
not
the cycle.
Get the catcher who, yeah, the catcher who had a home run, a triple, and a was a single.
Yeah, who raised his average in this series by 67 points.
That's what happens. You play the D-backs, your batting average goes up. Boy, it's hard not to like this Nikolai Jokic guy. I'm being honest here. Did you guys see this? Nikolai Jokic sends Sun center DeAndre Ayton an autographed jersey.
Oh, I didn't see that.
It was a pretty classy move.
Yeah. I mean, God, it's like, honestly, I like to have guys that you root against, like guys that you hate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I hate LeBron. I could root against LeBron. It's certain guys I don't like, you know, Paul George. I can root against. Nikolai Jokic sends this jersey to DeAndre Ayton to my brother DA. You are a beast. Keep up the good work. The Joker. I mean,
it's pretty hard to be mad at that.
Yeah. Exactly, right?
After a loss. You know, it's one thing if it's like, hey, we're moving on, you're not, I'll send you this jersey. But when you're the one that lost.
Yes, the MVP just got swept for the first time in a few decades.
Well, and even it extends to the campaign play where he got ejected, where he went over to campaign after the ejection and apologized.
Just a nice guy, right? He's just a nice guy.
So we have Mitch EV, who runs the board on the morning show. He's a Nuggets fan. He's from Colorado. Somebody shared that on the on Teams on our internal conversation platform. And Mitch wrote in response to that, the photo of that uniform, Jokic had plenty of time to decide what to write while he was in the locker room. Coming from a Nuggets fan.
Burns is in Colorado now. I'm like, oh, just hoist up a four sign somewhere, man.
He did.
He put up a four sign. I would just be walking around all over the place like that. Four.
Suns in four.
You're right, though. Jokic is not hateable. And even on that play with campaign, it was so uncharacteristic that it was like, what just happened?
I know.
But it was such a shock to the system going from the Lakers series, where you hated every single part of the Lakers,
everybody,
to not really disliking much at all about the Nuggets.
Yeah, maybe like two fans. That's about it.
They've even got a Morris on their team, but not the ones that you don't like.
Yeah.
You know,
he was an okay Morris.
He was an okay Morris.
Yeah.
You didn't really hate that guy that much. All right, Jordan pointed this out earlier. I think they did this. The Phoenix Suns are America's team in 2021, according to a Twitter map. I don't know if I buy this very much, but are the Phoenix Suns the team to root for in the NBA playoffs if you're not a Suns fan and you don't have a tie-in with any of these other teams?
I would say Suns or Bucks, wouldn't you? I mean, two teams that are trying to do it the right way that aren't. I mean, I guess Atlanta, but Atlanta's probably not going to win.
Let's take who you could eliminate, right?
Okay.
So you could eliminate the Clippers, right?
Yes.
You can eliminate the Clippers. You don't like the Clippers.
We're going super teams first. I mean, we can eliminate Brooklyn too.
Then we can eliminate the Nets. So that's your first two teams that you eliminate: the Clippers and the Nets. Nobody's rooting for the Clippers or the Nets if you're not a fan of that team.
I agree.
You're just not. Okay. Then in the West, you have the Jazz. You have the Suns, and that's it. And then in the East, you got Philly, you got Atlanta, and you got Milwaukee.
I don't think a lot of people outside of Philly
Philly teams. I'm going to take Philly out.
Okay.
Yeah. Philly's just one of those hard-ass towns. You can't really like Philly.
You don't want their fans to be happy.
You just don't.
Okay.
Yeah. They like boo Santa Claus, and they like throw batteries at people. Like, their fan base is not very good.
No.
The Diamondbacks have a runner on third with nobody out. Here comes the rally.
This could be an 8-run home
run. This could be it.
No.
The Diamondbacks down 8 in the ninth. Trying not to do it.
They could at least have the decency to not break the record during this show.
No, it's gonna happen.
Definitely going to
happen. All right, so now we're down. We just took out Philly.
Okay.
Teams to root for. Jazz, Suns, Milwaukee, Atlanta.
Okay.
Why the Suns?
I would also take Utah out. I feel like that is more of a, like, you're a Jazz fan or you're not a Jazz fan. Like, I don't think they're going to resonate nationally, even though Donovan Mitchell is one of the more entertaining players in the league to watch.
Okay. might buy that. I might buy that. If I could root for the Jazz. If the Jazz beat the Suns,
yeah,
and it was the Jazz versus Philly, I'd root for the Jazz.
Oh, yeah, I could do that.
Jazz versus Atlanta, I'd root for the Jazz. Jazz versus Milwaukee, I'd probably root for Milwaukee.
That's my other team, would be Milwaukee in this case. That's not like my other team, but I'm
10-3, just saying. 10-3, only down 7. Here they come. And the comeback is on.
And only one out.
Only one out.
Would you be willing to trade down runs for seven. Outs right now, San Francisco?
Here we go. All right, so Jazz, Suns, Atlanta, Milwaukee. I mean, the Suns, what do you like? What do people like about Atlanta? Got a nice young player in Trae Young. Milwaukee, yeah. You got Giannis. The Suns, you got Chris Paul and Devin Booker.
Yeah, that's the thing. The Suns are a fun team to watch. I think a lot of people are sort of being introduced more up close to Devin Booker now. And it is a team that is doing this essentially through the draft. I know they went out and got Chris Paul, but that was a trade. It wasn't like a, hey, force your way out of there and we're going to make a trade like L.A. getting Anthony Davis. It was you made a trade for a guy that a lot of other teams didn't want.
Yeah. So 17 states right now are rooting for the Suns. Let's go over them. Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, Oregon, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, Louisiana, Nebraska, Mississippi, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, West Virginia, Massachusetts, and Hawaii.
Oh, good. We got that Hawaii vote.
Yeah.
Nice.
So those are the teams that are rooting for the Suns. Have 17 states that are rooting for them.
I think to boil it down, I think what the Suns represent for other fan bases is hope. That if you can hit on some players in the draft, position yourself, get a good coach, position yourself to make a trade for a franchise-altering player, a veteran player, then if you're New Orleans or if you're Oklahoma City or you know any of these other small market teams, what the Phoenix Suns are doing right now this season gives you hope that your own team can do
it. You could be a 20-win team and all of a sudden – all of a sudden, you can go from 20 wins to the conference finals just like that.
That's the hope, right?
Arizona Sports, breaking news.
All right, guys. They did it.
The Arizona Diamondbacks have been swept again. It's a final in San Francisco. They hold the record for most consecutive road losses all by their lonesome.
Goodbye to the 1943 Philadelphia A's.
You're no longer in the record book.
Goodbye to the 1963 New York Mets.
You are no longer in the record book.
It's all D-backs, baby.
The D-backs have done it!
Let's go!
23 straight road losses! D-backs have done it!
And counting.
It's this!
Right. I mean, they have the Dodgers next.
Yes! Can we get to 30?
At home, but they've got the Dodgers next.
Oh, that wouldn't be a road loss.
But they've got 14 straight losses.
14 straight losses.
Oh, wow.
Is that the eighth straight series sweep? That might be the eighth straight. Can you look that up?
Looking at it right now.
It might be the eighth straight series sweep.
It's got to be eighth straight road series sweep, right?
Yeah, because they won one game against the Mets.
Road series sweeps. Series.
Road
I think
series.
It might be eight in a row. Their last road win. And they're not going to – they are actually going to go – and, Luca, you look at the schedule. I think they will go a full two – I said this –
2 months.
They will go a full 2 months without winning a road game now because they're returning home.
Assuming they beat San Diego on Friday, June 25th, which is their next road game.
Why would we assume that?
We would not assume that. And you know what? To make things even worse –
we're not going to assume that.
I just got an email within the last 10 minutes from, like, one of those PR firms that emails you, and they said Baxter ranked second most obnoxious mascot in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, way to just pile on. Yes.
No, we're number one today, man. This is all about – we are number one.
I mean,
We have the worst road losing streak in the history of baseball.
It's never
we own it. It's ours.
When you break a record held by a team that isn't a team, the Philadelphia Athletics is not a team.
It's safe to say that this record will last many of your lifetimes. Many of you listening right now will never see this record broken.
Well,
what record is never going to be broken? Well, in my lifetime, it'll never be broken that a team loses this many road games in a row.
Hold on. How many more road games do they have this season? Could they do this again later?
And that's the question. I mean, they broke the record. They hold it all by themselves now, but how many more games are they going to tag on to this record?
That's right. Pile on.
But, like, what if they win their next road game and then lose 24 road games in a row after that? They could break it again this season.
They can break their own record.
There's a lot of games left in this season.
Oh.
There's a lot of games. Look, they're not even competitive right now. They got clobbered yesterday. They got clobbered today. They had Merrill Kelly yesterday and Zach Gallen today, and that was their hope. They had that was their hope, like two guys that you could say, okay, those are major league pitchers. Historically, the worst road losing streak in the history of Major League Baseball now belongs to the D-backs. The 63 Mets and the 43 A's are off the hook.
Do you want the next two pitching matchups they have?
I mean, oh, by all means.
These are at home.
Yeah, give it to me.
Caleb Smith against Trevor Bauer.
Oh.
And then Matt Peacock against Walker Buehler. So.
All right, so 14 straight losses will turn into 16. What's the next road game, San Diego?
San Diego on June 25th.
Wow. They're going to go 2 months without a road win. 2 months without a road win.
They've only got – they have three road series left before the All-Star break. The Padres, the Cardinals, and the Dodgers. So like,
and they've had eight. Do we just say eight straight series sweeps? Is that what we came up with?
I believe eight straight.
Wow,
it's a lot of counting. Hold
eight straight series on the road in which they've been swept. Wow, just wow. Patrick Peterson thinks Larry Fitzgerald is not retired and may still play. We'll talk about that next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Hi, Luke in for Bernsey. He's somewhere in Denver trying to find some Nuggets fans. He's out there. He'll be back on Monday. Luke's filling in today and tomorrow. Talk a little Cardinals football. We are we're at June 17th, and Larry Fitzgerald has made no decision on his future that we know of. I think he knows, and I think the organization probably knows, but we have got no finalization from Fitz. Patrick Peterson, on his All Things Covered podcast with Bryant McFadden, had some interesting things to say that give us pause about what Fitz may end up doing. We've got a couple of cuts we want to play for you.
Yeah, here, let's start with this one.
Hey, if he ain't retired yet, he ain't going to retire. If Larry wanted to come back, you know, late in the year, whenever, you know, whenever the time may permit itself, they'll find a way.
What do you think of that? If Larry wanted to come back later in the year? It's like, does that mean he wouldn't play the start of the year?
No, if somebody gets injured, if, you know, I think Fitz loves playing on Sundays, but I think all the other stuff leading up to it, you know, hard training camps, and I don't think he loves that part of it, at, you know, especially at his age now and everything. I don't think he ever really enjoyed that part. He loves to go play on Sundays, but all the work to get to a Sunday, I don't think he's ever really thoroughly enjoyed that. But I think, you know, Patrick Peterson's got some cuts here to make you think that, you know, just give you pause. Anybody that thought, hey, Fitz is, he's not going to play anymore, you got to give it a second thought now after what Pat Pete said.
Yeah, I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm just expecting to not really hear anything, but then he's just not there at the start of the season. He kind of quietly retires, which he always sort of hinted that he would do. But Patrick Peterson is pretty close with Larry Fitzgerald. So yes, when he says something like that, you know, or something like this, when he was asked again on his own podcast, the All Things Covered podcast, where he thinks Larry would play, would he play somewhere else other than Arizona? Or if so, where would that place be?
So you're saying either he plays with Arizona or he don't play?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or I could see him going to Tampa, too. One of the two teams. Yeah.
They definitely don't have no room for him. What?
But listen, at the end of the day, what Larry wants is a championship. Period. And I, you know, if that's, because if you look at his, you know, last year, I think he played, you know, he missed a couple games. You know, I think obviously it was one of his lowest, you know, play counts in his career.
Yeah.
But Larry understands the position that he's in right now. He's not going to go out there and give you 40, 50 plays a game. He'll be in year 17. He understands he could probably go out there and give you a good 20 at least. And, you know, why not it be with a system that you already know and Bruce Arians, or come back to Arizona to help, if they able to make the run, help those guys make a push in the playoffs.
So Patrick Peterson saying Arizona or Tampa Bay.
Pretty much.
And that he's not capable of giving you a lot of plays, but he can give you 20. At the least 20 plays a game. Now, the financial aspect of it is interesting, too. These teams have no money. So here's a guy that's been playing for $10 million a year. And, you know, when we first talked about Fitz coming back, we said, okay, he's going to have to take a massive pay cut. Maybe get $5 million with some incentives that can make him 6 or 7. So that's what we discussed. you're at the point now where that's even off the table.
Yeah.
I don't know. You can't, I don't know that anybody can get to $5 million. No cap space. Unless you do, you get creative. Like if you get real creative, then maybe you could create something. And then just the room. I mean, the Cardinals don't have room for a wide receiver. The Bucs don't have room for a wide receiver. And then if he plays right now, you're talking about a minimum contract. I mean, you're talking about basically, unless there's, you know, a lot of restructuring done or some restructuring done, you're talking about a guy coming back and playing on a minimum deal.
Yeah.
I don't think, I've never thought that Larry Fitzgerald would play for a minimum. I mean, I just never thought that he would.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. And any team that's close to a ring that he would consider going to if that was a path he wanted to take, they don't have any ties to Larry Fitzgerald where they have to kind of wedge him in, right? I mean, if he came out tomorrow and was like, yeah, I want to keep playing for the Cardinals, are they going to find a way to fit me in? They kind of have to find a way to fit him in because he's Larry Fitzgerald. But if he comes out and is like, I want to play for Tampa, they don't have to. I mean, I know they have ties with BA and everything, and maybe they would, but they're not like under any obligation to. I wonder now that he's waited this long in the game. You know, I don't want to see him go play for some trash team, and he's not going to want to play for some trash team.
What would be the, okay, training camp starts in 6 weeks?
Yeah.
6 weeks?
Right,
5 weeks?
At the end of July, yeah.
And we're 5-6 weeks away from training camp starting. I mean, there's no benefit to retiring between now and training camp. You might want to see if somebody gets injured in training camp. You might want to see if somebody's not playing well. I mean, you just may want to keep your options open, you know?
Yes.
I mean, could it go down like this? Fitz doesn't say anything. Training camp starts. Training camp ends. The season starts. The season ends. And we never hear from Fitz.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think is going to happen, honestly. I think it a little bit less after hearing these cuts from Patrick Peterson. But, yes, that's sort of what I believe is going to happen. Now, this is my favorite. They asked him about any sort of chance that he could see Larry Fitzgerald joining him in Minnesota.
Have you heard any Viking buzz associated with Larry Fitzgerald?
Nah,
you know, he used to be a ball boy there.
Yeah, I know.
From Minnesota.
I haven't. You know, that would be interesting, you know, if he would want to come back to Minnesota. But now I necessarily don't see that happening. If it was a team that he was going back to, it would be Arizona.
Wouldn't it be great if he had said, didn't you just hear me? I said he wants to play for a contender. Why would he come to Minnesota? That would have been a great audio clip.
Yeah, that would have been great. I've always thought that he was going to retire, but he hasn't yet. And I think it very well may be that he just, you're so close to training camp starting, I don't know that there's any reason to say anything now. If there's even a small chance that he wants to play, maybe you take it into training camp, you see if somebody gets hurt. If a lot of teams that are contending, you have a wide receiver that go down,
yeah,
Larry Fitzgerald may be one of your first phone calls.
And that will happen. Right?
It could. Like, you could leave that. Like, that's what you could leave open. If I retire, I'm retired. I'm like, nobody's going to call him. But if I, it's unlikely I get called. But if I don't retire and I leave my options open and a wide receiver goes down in a preseason game or just in training camp, maybe a team calls me and says, hey, do you want to play?
Yeah, because it's always Dez Bryant that those teams call now. Yeah. Wouldn't you rather have Fitz? So yeah. maybe, and in that situation, I guess he can pick and choose. That makes sense. The only part of that I get hung up on is he kind of probably could have called his shot at the start of the offseason if he wanted to go somewhere. So maybe he just
maybe there wasn't any offers at that time.
Maybe it's,
I don't know. I don't think Fitz is going to play again, but after what Patrick Peterson said, I don't think you can say that for sure. It's not a certainty that Fitz is not going to play again.
I mean, if somebody goes down on the Chiefs and the Chiefs
right.
call you and you've never won a Super Bowl and you think you can still play, I mean, he looks like he can still play, just not be a number one or a two.
He could still play.
Yeah.
He could still contribute to a team. He's Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
He could still contribute to a team. He's not going to get you 100 catches anymore, or 90 or 80 or even 70, but could he go out there and, you know, in a full season, get somebody 40 catches, 45 catches and make some big plays? Sure. He's a great blocker. He's still a great blocker. He's a smart football. There's other ways that Fitz helps football teams, too, outside of just, hey, you know, I'm going to catch the ball. He's one of the best blocking wide receivers we've ever seen in our lives. So there's things that he could do. Just a smart player, right? How many times did you see that heads-up play with the time? He catches a ball, and, you know, you're working against the clock, and he rushes it to the official so they can get a snap off. I mean, he's just a smart football player. All right, the Suns are anxiously awaiting the winner of the Clippers and Nuggets series. The Clippers took the lead in that series last night. We'll tell you how they did it. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.